The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we've been saying all day about the problems of Ask the Expert today on sleep. It's a great pleasure to welcome Lucy Wolf, who's a sleep specialist and author. And the context of this is kids going on holidays, staying up later, not in their familiar bed and bedroom, and all the vagaries of maybe it's very hot and so on. Welcome, Lucy. What is the savvy advice?
Well, I think that now that these holidays are upon us, I encourage parents to have a flexibility, which they don't necessarily expect me to say, because a lot of the time when we're talking about sleep, we talk about regularity. Whereas during the summer holidays, you know, things are going to be different. School has just come out for the primary school children, and it is important to, you know, look at things in more flexibly. And if you want a series of late bedtimes and, you know, have ad hoc sleeping arrangements, I encourage parents to embrace that. But you also need to do that in the context of knowing your own child too.
But say they want to stay up till 10 o'clock and bedtime is normally 7.
Yeah, so again, you're going to move that around to within a range that feels comfortable for you. Some parents will continue to rely on the children's earlier bedtimes. But those who are wondering, is it possible to be a little bit less regulated? I guess there's permission there within the context of how far you want to take it yourselves. And to know that, you know, first of all, you may encourage some difficulties, you know, as in your child might become more overtired. But of course, you don't have to have too many late bedtimes in a row. But I just think, Ivan, it's important for parents to know that they don't have to be completely rigid, which is often, you know, slung around where sleep is concerned when we're trying to improve sleep. But if you have a reliable sleeper, then you can definitely be more flexible within
that. So there's different categories. There's kids under 4.
Yeah.
There's kind of then up to 5 till 12, and then there's teenagers.
That's right.
Do different rules apply?
Well, I suppose the biggest guidance would be to know your own child and to know your own family setting. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
So that, you know, I think that, you know, as the teenagers who've been on holidays for ages, you know, a lot of them will be sleeping in late and kind of operating on that late cycle. And again, if that's suiting the family, seems to suit the child, and also we can get back on track as we approach the academic year, then that's ideal. Obviously, with a very young child in the, you know, the 0 to 4 year cohort, we're a little bit more restricted because their lives are, you know, governed by daytime sleep as well as the earlier range of bedtime. But again, you know, even if you want to look at and explore, can you have naps on the go instead of always in the cot? You know, can you be flexible within the current sleep situation that you have? And then, of course, you mentioned the primary school children as well. And, you know, I think it's nice to, if it's a possibility, to be a little bit more flexible in the summer months, and then to just do everything you can to keep promoting the sleep hygiene and the positive sleep practice that exists in your household.
What about if you have a routine, a bedtime story or whatever, and the familiarity of sleep clothes? Would you continue that if you're in Portugal?
Yeah, I do try and keep the main principles together, because sleep does, you know, respond very well to cues. And the bedtime ritual that you just set out there is a very strong cue for sleep. So even if you are going to have a later style bedtime, and if we are sleeping in an unfamiliar location, you can bring your cue-based rituals with you. And that can help your child to acclimatise, to get into a rhythm in a foreign location. And I don't mean foreign necessarily abroad, but like a different room, where different scents and smells, different timings. And again, the bedtime ritual itself is a great cornerstone to help, you know, honour sleep in of itself.
Okay, we'll just say you've gone to a very hot climate. It's 40 degrees. They're not used to this at night. What's the best way to cope?
Yeah, heat and sleep do not go well together, because the core body temperature drops in order to initiate the sleep process itself. So doing everything that we can in the hotter climates to make sure that the room itself is cooled down in advance of sleep. Now, the hope would be there's AC, but in the absence of it, you know, you can look at creative ways like having a fan with a bottle of frozen water put in front of it. So you're moving around cold air instead of just moving around hot air. You know, you can remove the waterproof sheets and things like that that can help create free air circulation. And then what you could also look at is, you know, cool bath. in advance of sleep time, or even just running the wrists under cold water before we begin the sleep ritual. I would be careful always about eating too close to sleep time, because again, digestion creates heat. And as I say, heat and sleep don't go great.
So preferably, if they're going to bed at 8, eat by 5, 6?
Yeah, 2 hours or so before sleep time. Give the digestive tract a chance to relax and do its business.
I have 4 grandchildren now, and I find one of the ways to shut them up is to give them an iPad or put on the telly, and they just completely go into a trance. Where do you stand on screens at night?
Well, I guess in general, I'd be flexible because I'm practical around how parents are managing things. However, obviously, where sleep is concerned, we do know there is an impact between the, you know, the overuse of electronic media to stimulate the waking part of the brain. So when possible, I limit it, you know, and throughout the course of the day, I would always put emphasis on outside time and fresh air and activity and using light as a determinant of alertness, and then using the dimmer light to invite sleep. But also maybe just avoiding electronics and screens the hour or two before bedtime, because what it does and what you describe perfectly for your grandchildren is that it can put them into this sort of trance setting, which we might describe as being having false restoring qualities, which actually then sometimes recharges the batteries and then makes it hard for the child to actually get to sleep. And there are some of the things that we try and avoid, this resistance to sleep.
And does insomnia as such, as a condition, if you have it as a child, are you more likely to have it as an adult?
I think that the research demonstrates that there is a link between those two activities. However, we do know that sleep is something that can be developed, you know, that there are lots of parts to it. You know, it's a bit of everything. It's psychological, it's environmental, it's nutritional. Like, so there are lots of parts to it that we can actually work on to improve sleep. So again, like that, you know, you can be a poor sleeper in childhood, and there seems to be trends into adulthood. But also we can improve sleep by making adjustments and changes. I'm not going to say it's easy. Obviously, it is easier when you're trying to help a young child sleep better, because there are things that you can do. It makes it a little bit more difficult when you're older. The emotional landscape is maybe different as well. But there's always hope to improve sleep.
At what age should you stop the daytime nap?
Well, the daytime nap sort of retires itself, if that makes any sense to you. So generally by about 3, the majority of children have probably stopped napping. Now, that doesn't mean if your child is 4 and is still napping, you need to be concerned. But the biological need for the nap starts to ebb away as your child gets close to 3. And what we then anticipate is, in the absence of the nap, the sleep is now being achieved in just one setting. So ideally, bedtime might come forward to compensate for the loss of the nap. And parents will know when the nap is ready to go, because they'll stop napping, or they'll nap every other day. Or
finally, any tips on when you go to a different time zone? The clocks are going back 8 hours. They're completely disorienting.
And it does challenge the biological clock. I tend to try not to worry too much about it, if I'm honest, and recommend that when you arrive in your destination, the morning, you know, after your first night's sleep, get up in local time. Ideally, for young children, no later than around 7:30 a.m. so that you get up, you're exposed to bright natural light, you begin to regulate the body clock. And try not to, for children who are still napping, let the naps run too long, because your priority is to try to get into a relatively normal bedtime range.
Finally, Lucy Wolf, do you have a website or anything like
that? Yes, that's right. And I work with parents on a one-to-one basis, so you can contact me via sleepmatters.ie.
Sleepmatters.ie. My thanks to Lucy Wolf for all that sagacious advice, which can be a real problem for kids, especially when their routine is upset.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.